WLFP Braddock.
Good morning, travelers, diners, and Peter.
Oh, my goodness. You caught me off guard. I thought you were going to do a whole lot more stuff.
Nah.
But we're... We have lots to do on the show. We're sort of all over today.
Right, we are. You're listening, of course, as you must always, on Sunday mornings to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And we're going to be running... Odds and ends, is that what it is?
Okay.
Finishing up some themes that we started earlier and then launching into a new theme in California. Let's finish up. Our last program, we talked about the wonderful picnic at the Jamison Farm for the Jean-Louis Paladin Foundation.
But we had one more person.
Yeah.
Well, we ran into a Californian, and you'll see that it's appropriate there'll be a Californian on the program just a little bit later. But let's hear now from Evan Danko, who came all the way from wherever he came from.
Not California.
Well, his brother's in California.
No, it's not his brother.
It's not his brother.
Would you like to start
just
all over?
Just the same last name?
Take it from the top.
No, that's okay.
It's his cousin. His cousin's originally from around here.
That's pretty close.
He's originally from here, not the other way around.
So anyway, Evan Danko's cousin Gary Danko has a famous restaurant in San Francisco, and Evan is no mean chef himself.
Right. So let's listen to what he had to say about this event.
Evan Danko, you worked so hard tonight for this Jean-Louis Paladin dinner. I mean, you prepared those little lamb things. The hanger steaks, I've never seen anything like it. Hello.
That was Jimmy Sneed's idea. they turned out really good, and I never used a hanger steak, so... I learned something new here.
They were minute, I must say, and they had to be skinned, and you stood there for probably, I would say, 2 hours.
Yes, definitely, but it was definitely worth it. Jimmy Sneed, who worked for Jean-Louis Paladin, I've long been waiting to meet him since John Tsuki invited me to come up here and help out with the dinner. So
we should point out these were not beef hanger steaks. These are lamb hanger steaks where the hangers are a whole lot smaller.
It took a lot more time to prepare. Now, you were too young to have known Jean-Louis.
Yes, actually I lived in Richmond and I moved there in 2000, and I guess he was part of Frog in the Redneck with Jimmy Sneed. I think it closed down in, 2000? So 2001, so about the time that I moved there, I heard of Jean-Louis before then and followed his work, and definitely inspired me in this industry. I definitely think that he brought us here in the United States definitely passion for the industry, and he demanded good product, and I think that I've heard interviews that he actually started the whole idea of FedExing food products from different parts of the country to his restaurant, whether it be in Las Vegas or in Washington D.C. He actually started this process that we so much use through different companies like Chef's Garden, and I think that he inspired people to start businesses of that magnitude for the industry, just because they have such great product, and this is what he grew up knowing, and just has had such a huge passion for what he did, and he didn't want stuff coming off a truck that just was marked whatever the purveyor was. He wanted to know where it came from, who actually grew it, and how they took care of it, and he basically just demanded the best product, and also perfectionism, I think in his own self and everybody around him. I've heard some very, very funny stories about Jean-Louis from John Jamison, and today from Jimmy Sneed. Respect for a foundation, that really does what the Jean-Louis Foundation does. Basically, they're trying to prolong learning for young chefs, and I think that's great.
Now, you have a very famous cousin, Gary Danko, who has a very famous restaurant in San Francisco called Gary Danko. And you are also a chef and in the restaurant business. And is this genetic?
I'd like to think so, because I started doing what I do at a very young age. My grandmother, who's passed away, I learned how to can at the age of five. Took care of grapes. She had a small patch of a small vineyard, actually. Took care of grapes. Made grape juice, jams, and different things. And basically, spent a lot of time there because I had such a passion for what she did. Whenever I went to her house, everything had to be fresh. It had to be homemade. She had a really passion for making food for whether it be myself, my father, my grandfather, or my siblings. So I sort of took that, and basically the reason why I'm doing, she tried her best, but she was never really a great cook.
Oh, my, well, we're not gonna, and we don't want your mother to be angry with you. Tell us instead where you are now and about the spa cuisine you do.
I'm currently at the Roger Woodlock. It's located in Holly, Pennsylvania. It's northeastern Pennsylvania. And yes, we do spa cuisine. And right now I think we're innovators for the whole spa cuisine. We're definitely doing things that nobody else is doing.
Like what?
Like different dishes that I do. I use a shank from Jamison Farms, and I take a shank and I basically cook it like ossobuco style, and I do it with like a potato au gratin, which spa cuisine, I mean, that's totally unheard of.
That's not low anything.
Well, what I do is I take garlic and I blanch it off a series of about 8 times, changing the water out each time. Then I puree it, and it's basically takes on the almost the same flavor profile as heavy cream. So I use that in a lot of sauces and different things, because blanching it that many times takes out the bitterness, and it actually makes it taste true to what it is.
I mean, we're going to have a whole other recording session with you doing this. We're going to come visit your spa, and we will interview you there again and taste the food. Thanks for talking to us.
Sounds great. Well, I appreciate this, and definitely you have to hold true to what you just said, and you and your husband need to come up to the spa, and we'll definitely take care of you. And we have a demonstration kitchen, too, so we can do a demo, and you can record that.
Wow. Yeah, we forgot that we were supposed to go there, too.
No, we didn't forget.
I'm about spawned out after Bedford Springs. But
we just didn't get around to it, as they say.
Right.
You know what around to it is, right?
Yeah.
Something you can get around to whenever you can. Now, we're going to change direction altogether, backtracking just a little bit, because we were at the Fancy Food Show in New York, as listeners regularly will know, several weeks ago. And we have one fascinating story. It's a real feel-good story, and it's explained in the recording. So why don't we just go ahead?
This is a story about how three Englishmen can make a difference. We're at the Fancy Food Show. I'm talking to one of them. His name is Neil Kelsall. He's from Preston in Lancashire. And he and two friends found out about the country of Madagascar, language Malagasy. They formed a company called Malagasy, and they're trying to help stabilize and improve the economy of this relatively suffering island nation. Neil, how did you get started with this?
Oh, hi. Yeah. 3 years ago, a group of us, Terry Horn, who's a renowned academic from the University of Central Lancashire, Adrian Corns, and Siri Wilkinson, who used to be a former commercial attaché to the British Embassy, and myself, we all got together, and what happened is that we wanted to find a way of ending poverty by creating trade in higher value products. Madagascar is an island which is about 2.5 times the size of Britain, probably about 100 times bigger than the Galapagos Islands. World renowned for some of the greatest fauna, biodiversity. It's like a mini continent. It's got the lemurs and a whole range of rainforest. And it offers cash crops which are sold at cents per pound, such as like peppers and coffees and cocoa. And the population on the island is around about 20 million. And those 20 million people are, I'd say, 7 out of 10 are in dire poverty. If you look at the GDP or the amount of money per head compared to the UK, you're talking 100 times difference. So our project was to help create added value on those cash crops.
So I'm standing in front of a poster which says, "We need an economic system that is more equitable than one at the moment." Archbishop Desmond Tutu, very famous for all of you who followed what's been going on in South Africa for all of these years. So what Neil and his colleagues created was a scheme called Equitrade. So tell us about Equitrade.
Yeah, Equitrade is a way, it's to show or to create added value. So I'll give you an example. The cocoa in Madagascar is normally exported to chocolate factories in America or the United States or Europe, and they're turned into chocolate, which is worth probably, what, 6 to 7 times more in value than actually the cocoa. So the Equitrade Equitrade concept is about investment and turning the cocoa into a fine chocolate bar. And we've been able to do it with a chocolate bar called the More and More chocolate bar in the UK. It's already selling at Fortnum's and Mason's, a very well-known chain of stores called Waitrose, Sainsbury's and Tesco's, and also in Scandinavia and Germany. And our chocolate bar, the Mora Mora, is a partnership with a Madagascan company called the Ramadrebe family. And what happens is, if we increase the amount of value created, then more taxes are collected by six to seven times for health and education. Now, this project started from our own pockets. There was no money available from the government, or it was a case of doing a market research, investing in Madagascar, transferring technology and know-how. And what we're saying is, there's a need for the process of what we've gone through in the last 3 years, and we've called it Equitrade, and that is going to be set up as an independent foundation, which will do exactly the same thing, not just for Madagascar, but for all companies in the developing nations. And that's being launched this year as we speak.
So you'll be able to follow what's going on the menu radio, because Neil's promised to keep us in touch with what's going on. The neat part about it is, you can indulge your sweet appetite for dark chocolate at the same time as you can be doing good, because here Neil and his colleagues are trying to place the product with distributors in the United States. We're guessing it'll catch on here, and on the menu radio is where you'll be able to find out about it. If you want to know more about the project, there's a website for that, Neil.
Yeah, the website is www.malagasy.co.uk. And the information about Equitrade is www.equitrade.org. Okay.
Thank you so much for talking to us, especially I'm trespassing on your time because a technical problem lost the first interview. Did you like the second one?
Very good, yeah, very good. So. The most important thing is we want this project to work, and we've shown that it's working, and I really appreciate your time to come back and redo the interview again. So that's great.
Thank you so much. Have a great show.
And it's time now to take a break.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
Welcome back to On the Menu Radio. I might have lost my voice there.
a frog got your voice.
You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and Ann's about to get a giggle fit.
I better take over. You can follow all of our activities by going to www.onthemenuradio.com. One of the exciting things you'll find there, if you're interested in follow-up on the Fancy Food Show, is an article in the section OTM on print, in print, which printed just a couple of weeks ago. Miss Ann compiled all of her new favorites from the show, and there's a very large column. It's like she almost has the entire newspaper to herself in this particular publication. So,
About trends.
I hope you saw it on the newsstands. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, because the photos are in the newsstand.
If you want the photos are only available in the newsstand copy. That's life in the big city. But we were away from the big city for a while. On the Menu recently made another trip to California, which we always seem to find lots of excuses to do. So in the next few weeks, you'll hear from a variety of different winemakers and people with wonderful
chefs,
new resort offerings, chefs, a couple of great winemakers talking to us.
Producers.
And what better place to start our trip in California than one of the earliest wineries in Northern California in a section called the Anderson Valley, started by an oil wildcatter turned successful businessman turned wine lover called Tom Jordan. And his winery, of course, is named after himself. It's the Jordan Winery. And we visited there. We had a splendid tour, a tasting and lunch. First up, because it's wine, we're going to talk about how Jordan makes wine.
On the Menu is in Sonoma County in the bucolic Alexander Valley, and we're at a wonderful winery called Jordan. Scott Hilsman is a spokesperson for the Jordan Winery, and he's going to tell us how the story began.
Thank you very much, Peter. The story of Jordan Winery began in 1972 as petroleum geologist Tom Jordan purchased 1,600 acres in the beautiful Alexander Valley, as you mentioned. The winery established was focusing on a little bit more of a Bordeaux or French tradition to get a style of wine that would be as quality as some of the first growth chateaus in Bordeaux and or Burgundy. The focus was to make a Cabernet Sauvignon blend and also a very southern Burgundian style of Chardonnay. By 1974, Tom Jordan had planted vineyards on the valley floor to Cabernet Merlot and some Chardonnay and started production in 1976.
The story actually begins a little before that, I think, when Tom fell in love with a famous French chateau.
That is correct. Tom Jordan, most of his oil and gas destinations were Eastern and Asian countries, and throughout his travels, he focused a lot of time on Western Europe, and namely France. He was inspired by Chateau Margaux in Bordeaux as a quality of wine that he was so taken with and impassioned with that after his largest oil discovery in 1970, he then looked to focus on making wine an everyday part of his life.
So that was a great opportunity for all of us. So it's our good fortune, as well as Tom Jordan's good fortune, that this took. There's a consistency theme that you were talking with us about as we toured the estate. So you don't make lots of different kinds of wine, do you?
No, that's correct. We focused just on two bottles of wine. Tom Jordan felt that in the reserve style or kind of in that reserve format that one bottle of Chardonnay and one bottle of Cabernet was going to be our most success. So with that, we set out. Actually, believe it or not, the Chardonnay was almost an afterthought. We were just going to be a Cabernet house until the 1979 vintage. We actually started then bottling Chardonnay. for the production, and then held with those two as we were releasing these wines in the early 80s, 1980 for the first Cabernet vintage of 1976, and 1981 for the first vintage of Chardonnay.
And there's one very famous name in California winemaking who was involved at the beginning of the Jordan story, and then a name of someone who's now famous, but at the time that he came, he was only 22 years old. Tell us about them.
Very good. We have hired in our history the consulting winemaker of Andrei Chelichev, who was famous from Napa Valley and also his training years in France. Andrei hand-selected our current winemaker, as you were speaking to consistency, Rob Davis, who indeed was 22 years old, just graduating from UC Davis fermentation science degree in 1976. Very quickly, Rob found out that Jordan Winery was going to be a great place to call home, and especially the opportunity to be mentored by Andrei Chelichev. And now at age 53, Rob is in his 32nd harvest with Jordan Winery and has in that sense been our one and only winemaker. So the consistency and quality can be spoken true, as it's been mostly one palate.
You mentioned something else interesting about the fact that Tom Jordan came across a bottle of George Latour BV from the 1960s, and that was also part of the process that he thought it might be possible to make Bordeaux-style wines in California.
Yeah, with that inspiration found in that kind of chance bottle of the 1968 George Latour Private Reserve, that really focused or solidified the idea for Tom Jordan to be able to make a first-growth winery benefiting from the traditions of French winemaking, but also then with the climate of California, a little bit more rich character, a little bit warmer climate, so there's more fruit concentration in the wine. And that 68 BV really solidified the create that first growth experience.
And the good news, of course, you wine aficionados who are part of the OTM family know that Jordan Cabernet and Jordan Chardonnay are widely available. What perhaps most of you don't know is that it is possible to make a visit here. It's an absolutely delightful spot, and the only thing it makes me feel is jealous. So, Scott, if people are interested in visiting Jordan for a tour and a tasting, how do they go about that? Can it be arranged on a website where they're actually going to go to geographically?
Yes, located in Healdsburg, California, of Sonoma County, about an hour north of San Francisco, as I'm looking out this window into a beautiful summer day here at Jordan Winery and approaching the harvest of 2007. Folks can visit the winery going through our website and or calling and make an appointed tour. We have full tours and tastings available at 11 a.m. Every morning, and then going into a tasting times only in the afternoon. But our experience is intimate and small. We don't have just an open tasting room or bar in that sense, and we appreciate the time and effort that folks make it out here to the winery and do a sit-down tasting with us so that we can have, as you and I are having this conversation about wine, question and answers, just a little bit more face-to-face experience here at Jordan. It makes it very exclusive.
And I'm sure you host special events and things like that too, so if somebody's interested in something of that kind, they can also get in touch with you as well.
Yeah, we can work with the general request for a special visit, either birthday or anniversary, where we may be able to take our executive chef, Todd Knoll, and have him prepare some special hors d'oeuvres for a food and wine pairing. Beyond that, we have more of a private facility for dining and overnight stay, which was reserved for most of our trade visitors, those that are in business with Jordan Winery throughout the nation and parts of the world, but definitely can take requests to try to make the customer experience even that more personal or enhanced. Visitors coming to Jordan Winery can schedule a tour or tasting through our website at jordanwinery.com or call us at 1-800-654-1213.
Now for the good business. We're going to do a real-time tasting with Scott describing the Chardonnay and the Cabernet Sauvignon that we have in front of us, and I'm going to be hands-free for a few minutes while I enjoy.
Thank you. What I have here for us to taste leading off is our 2005 Russian River Valley Chardonnay. Tremendous amount of minerality leading on the nose with a strong balance of lemon flower, lemon, green apples, oftentimes a little touch of stony fruits in the background. And then our barrel program is to hold those notes of oak for the background. And you get a touch of vanilla leading into a medium finish and a very fresh acid rinse for this style of Chardonnay. Great for seafood and a wide variety. Besides that, here we have the beautiful color getting into almost a purple Garnet of the 2003 Cabernet Sauvignon. This is a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon Merlot, a touch of Cabernet Franc and Petit Verdot. A lot of the fruit-forward characters in this Cabernet lead from black cherry, blackberry, cassis. Our hillside vineyards are adding touches of cocoa powder or chocolate nuances to the wine, and as well in the barrel program for the Cabernet Sauvignon, trying to have that as a secondary, and the touches of vanilla and spice follow with, again, a very, very fresh acid rinse for this Cabernet Sauvignon.
One of the controversies out there in the wine business is whether California wines age as well as French wines, comparable grape varieties. What's been your experience with the age worthiness of the Jordan red wines?
I've almost been surprised in some sense. Customer visit will include a library selection for the tasting. However, Jordan Winery features vintages back to 1979 and 1980, including large format bottles. In particular, this 1980 at 27 years old is drinking absolutely perfectly. Beautiful ones with the winemaking in the 80s. There are touches of coffee and toffee in this this beautiful vintage, but just an tremendous amount of balance and really lasting in the bottle. At least 10 to 12 years for an average age of our wines, regardless of vintage.
Well, that's wonderful. Listen, so if you have one in the cellar, keep it there. If you see one on your wine store shelf, grab it. Don't have to drink it immediately. This has just been a wonderful visit to Jordan. Scott, thank you so much. A last thought for our listeners?
Good wine, good food for everyday life, and appreciate the time and the listeners there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and throughout the world. Enjoy Jordan wines anytime you can.
That's a very good suggestion.
Yes,
and
wonderful
and
wine.
Here's an interesting note for real enophiles who think they know Jordan very well, the 2003 vintage is quite unusual because it's the first vintage where they ever bottled the wine unfiltered and unfined. I had been talking to Scott earlier about the purity of the processing and the style, and the French, of course, would never bottle a wine unfiltered and unfined, but the winemaker thought the 2003 needed it, and it was terrific.
It was wonderful, yeah. So, and of course, we're going to
be sure. So if I can find some, I'm going to buy some.
I thought you already did that, no?
I don't think so.
No.
No, and now there'll be a line of my state store to make sure that I can't buy any more. And now it's time to take a break.
The flagship station of the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. This is 1550 WLFP, Pittsburgh.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
Welcome back to On the Menu. We're now getting into the part of this visit to Jordan Wineries that I recall with such glee, this private dining room with a private luncheon with their private executive chef.
And his wife, who was...
And his wife, who...
Who actually runs the front of house side of the program.
Yeah. And so anyhow, we had an absolutely splendid meal.
We did.
Yes, and we talked.
And here's
the
man
chef.
Who made it and talked to us about it.
I keep telling you all, listeners, about the fabulous meals that I've had. And this one, I think, is particularly spectacular. The chef is Todd Knoll, and he's a state executive chef at Jordan Vineyard and Winery. And chances are, unless you make a very special reservation, you won't get to taste this guy's cooking, but it's like you're at the top of the line of cooking as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me here in my dining room. It was a real pleasure cooking. We love having guests here.
Tell us where you came from.
I was trained at the CCA. I grew up in Hawaii and have a bit of a Pacific Rim in my background. But trained at the CCA, was at the Ritz-Carlton for 6 years, and then was lured out here by a great French chef of mine that brought me to Jordan.
That's the California Culinary Institute is what you're talking about.
Yes.
Right. And you're young.
Not that young. I'll be 38 in October.
He looks younger. He's also got good hair. Now, let's talk a little bit about what we had for lunch, because it was really extraordinary.
Oh, thanks. Well, we try and just stay out of the way of you know, our great food we have. We have two gardens here, one organic here and one at the residence, which is about 15 minutes south. So basically it involves a walk through the garden in the morning, fresh squash blossoms, the corn that's picked that morning, and you just can't do harm to them. So today we started with a risotto that was finished with a corn pudding, which is just naturally thickened by the starch in the corn itself, and is finished with just a touch of tomato, Maine lobster, and a deboned scallop that was brought in this morning.
The tomato, though, was actually tomato water. Right. Oh, no, that was the first course. We had an amuse with the tomato water on gelée with the caviar.
It's one of my favorite amuse. It's kind of an easy trick. One of the things you have to do here, it's so easy to get carried away, but again, to stay out of the way, we want really clean flavors. We have a great relationship with a caviar purveyor in Nantucket, and so it's just a clean gelée that was set up the night before, tomatoes from our garden from still warm from the sun in the afternoon, a quenelle of caviar, and scallion.
Now, we moved on from the poached lobster.
Yeah, the lobster, as I said, is a dish we actually cook the lobster through on sous vide at a very low temperature in a fenner butter, and then just slowly warm it and finish it through with a carnaroli, fresh corn again out of the garden, and a corn pudding.
I knew there was something special about this lobster. It was so tender. It was just incredible.
Yeah, it's a simple trick. It's a simple trick, but it's a good one.
Now we move on to veal cheek, and this is your mentor. Could you pronounce his name?
His name is Udo Nikutnis. He trained under Paul Bocuse. He's a fabulous chef, and it's one of my favorite dishes, and it just speaks to summer. And it also shows the wine well, because typically you wouldn't be able to push the acid in a dish so well with a Cabernet, but we can with ours. So I like to kind of walk that tightrope. And so it's a veal cheek poached. We finish it in a sauce gerbiche, a poached egg, a little fine herb again, simple potato, simple sherry vinaigrette, and that's it.
I loved it. My co-host here has just pushed this in front of my eyes, saying, what types of foods go well with the Jordan wines?
Well, as I was saying, it's very simple. We take the food from off the estate. We are fortunate enough to be able to purchase anything in the world. I bring fish in from Japan, from Hawaii. We bring in real Kobe beef. And what we can do with the Jordan wine is push the outside of the envelope, as it were, almost to the point of Sauvignon Blanc with the bright acidity, the fruit forwardness of the Cabernet. I can use fruit in my sauces, which might wash out other Cabernets in the genre, but we can stand up, but particularly the 2003 is very strong and balanced in that sense.
This almost obviates my second question, is why do you choose to work at Jordan Winery as opposed to a restaurant where you'll be exposed to more celebrity?
Well, when I first drove out here and looked over the wall and called my friends back in the kitchen at the Ritz-Carlton and looked out over the garden and the olive trees, I think that just cemented it. I can park here. I can live a normal life. It's a beautiful place to work. It's a wonderful small family. And well, the Ritz-Carlton was...
I mean, I'd be hard-pressed not to move here if I were invited.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. And your wife is here.
Yes, my wife is here. We're a husband and wife team as well. We've worked together for now 7 years, so still working well together.
I think what I really would like to know is, how are you going to share this talent with people who cannot avail themselves of this kind of private opportunity?
Well, I think in the future we're going to do more of the large events, as I met you in Miami Beach. We'll do South Beach again. We're going to involve ourselves more in events around the country. So small bites and more people. And we always have release parties for the Chardonnay as well as the Cabernet.
I love your cooking. I think you're so talented. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Chef Todd Knoll, I forgot to ask you, actually, before we sign off altogether, what is this olive oil project at the winery?
It's kind of an evolving project. We have 20 acres of olives. We sell it only at the winery. 275 case production, cold pressed, bottled within 24 hours. It's Tuscan varietals, but we're moving more with Spanish varietals. So we're about 22% Arbequina now, and we're going to be moving in that direction going forward.
That's really exciting. Let us know when you really want to kind of push some of this stuff.
I'll send you some bottles. It's excellent oil. We just silvered and received a gold at the LA County Fair. And
that's part of the charm of living in this absolutely
It is paradisiac.
Well, we sort of rattled on and didn't get we sort of then drifted
we,
off.
Didn't we just?
Didn't we just? Well, every time I hear that.
Might have been the lunch.
It could have been the lunch, it was fabulous.
Could have been the 2003 Cabernet. That might have.
It was fabulous. I mean, I just.
There's
a few experiences in life where you could just go back and do the whole thing, start to finish.
Yeah, find an excuse to go here, listeners. Absolutely find an excuse. It's a absolutely beautiful bucolic spot. Everything blends into the landscape, and the welcome mat is out big time.
Oh, now we're going to move on.
We're going to change horses.
Yes, we are. We're going to change horses.
But we're not going far.
No.
We're going to a restaurant called Mosaic in the little town of Guerneville in the Russian River Valley, and we're talking to the chef owner.
On the Menu has now moved into the Russian River Valley at Forestville at a restaurant that is so charming, you're just going to be thrilled to death with it, as are tourists and locals alike, called Mosaic. Mosaic Restaurant and Wine Lounge, which means that they actually have wine and beer and fabulous food. And we're talking to the chef owner, Ty Oleski. Ty, how did you get that name?
Oh, very creative parents, we'll say that. But it was different growing up, but I've grown to love it. So
now, every bit of publicity about you brags that you are a local son, born and raised, and you came back after world travels to actually establish this restaurant in your hometown. Is that true?
Yes, it is. I did grow up here, and I wanted to move away, and I saw the world, and now I'm back. I love it here with all my heart. It's the greatest place to be, for a chef especially, but the culture and the weather and the people are just, I really do love it here.
And the ingredients.
That's why it's the greatest spot for a chef. We've got four seasons. We're in the Mecca of wine, right in the middle of wine country. You know, it's very Burgundian here, and we have so many farms, and I grow local, organic produce whenever I can, and farms, and I actually live around the corner, and I have an acre. We have a large garden. Much of the food at the restaurant comes from the garden, all organic. You know, fresh is the key, and we are in a very fresh spot. Cheese, I mean, everything, it's all here. Great.
It seems like paradise, to be true. I also love, which is not sort of a little off the track we're talking about, I love that your exhibition kitchen actually, how to describe this? It only lets you see part of the chefs working.
Well, I did that on purpose. I put obviously the listeners can't see it now, but the cooking line has a small segment in the middle that's open where the food comes up, and then above that is glass, which is kind of tinted, so you can see. I wanted people to see the shapes and the patterns and the energy back there, kind of when the flame comes up. People can relate it, so it's kind of like dinner theater, so it's feel the energy back there, because it's so much of it happens back there, you know. And but at the same time, I don't like, for me, it's very personal, and I don't like to be fully exposed. And we also, you know, if you've ever worked in a kitchen, you know the vulgarity that goes on. So I didn't want people to see and hear everything that happens, but I also wanted them to be a part of it. So hopefully you felt that, and that was my objective.
I loved it. It's like a little ballet, but just like with the parts that count, like the no faces, hands.
Well, and did we end that? I think we have more of this interview, but I think it's also time to take a break. So we're going to take a break.
Data security and speed can be what puts your business ahead of your competition. But cost is important, too. You might be paying every month for bandwidth you don't use. Let's talk about your company's disaster recovery system. Is it as effective and secure as it could be? What are you paying for your T1 line? I'll bet we can offer you a better deal. We're ASP Station, a premier independent server co-location facility and high-speed internet access provider. Virtually unlimited bandwidth, co-location for your backup servers, off-site system backup, and secure access to your equipment 24/7. Check us out on the web at aspstation.net or call us at 412-661-6001. Easy number to remember, 412-661-6001. ASP Station, 412-661-6001.
You know how sometimes you hear people say, I wonder if I have the right investments. I wonder if I can retire early. I'm not sure how much money I will need to invest today to retire comfortably. How do I know what I should do to be able to help my children pay for college? What do I need to know to start a business or buy a house? We are the people who can help you find the answers to those questions. I'm Mary Grace Musenegi, the senior partner of the Musenegi Financial Group. We're a financial consulting firm that helps people make wise decisions with their money. We have a unique second opinion program that allows us to review your financial plans and investments with you without you changing advisors, companies, or products. So for a free consultation, please give us a call at 412-833-2888 or email me personally at mfgplanners, Mary Grace Musenegi at mfgplanners.com. Again, email me at marygrace@mfgplanners.com.
You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we started in our interviews with the Ty Oleski, who's the chef owner of Mosaic in California.
And I misspoke. The town is called Forestville. The road is Guerneville Road. So,
okay.
So that people don't think I was totally asleep.
And we had sort of an abrupt ending of the last one.
Yeah, I think
Peter hit the stop button.
I think I hit the stop button by mistake. A very useful thing to know is that this Mosaic is just around the corner from a wonderful sparkling wine vineyard called Iron Horse.
Oh yes, which
remember,
we adore.
We passed the entrance to Iron Horse, so you're in the right neighborhood here in a really very quiet little town. It almost doesn't look like a town. And Ty, as he said, went around the world and came home, talked about why he did that, the start of his cuisine, and we continued to talk to him for quite a long time.
Ty, you did this incredible 10-course tasting menu for us. You also describe your cooking style as California global. Tell us first what you mean by that, and then let's talk about some of the food we ate.
Oh, very good. California global to me means, you know, there's always this California cuisine talk, and what that means is really up in the air still. But for me, my personal take on things is that it's about taking regional, locally produced food of very high quality, be it everything from farm to garden to, you know, everything, and then really a ethnic influence on it. So, for example, on the you didn't have the prawn dish, but I do have a prawn dish. And when I was in Southeast Asia, they use a lot of sweet and sour as the combination. So I do a thing with the prawns that's very Southeast Asian. So to me, that would be like a global, California global would be something like that. But I also use a lot of French technique. You had the pasta. We do all our pasta from scratch, Italian. I mean, it basically means cutting down the boundaries and borders of food in your mind and using the great ingredients and no holds barred and doing whatever you want. For me, doing whatever I think is going to taste good without being pigeonholed into any one thing. If I feel like doing a Mexican sauce on a French classical French dish, I will. And often, you know, that's the true beauty for me of being a chef, is that, you know, the plate is the canvas and you can really create anything you want without boundaries. And that really, to me, is what it's all about, is myself to always be better and trying new things that haven't been done, and creating new true creative expression is something that hasn't been done. And that's what it's about for me.
Could you just select a few of these dishes from our 10-course tasting menu and explain what we had? I might just sort of lead you a little bit, saying that I love that cannelloni.
Well, the cannelloni's great. You know, that's fresh rock shrimp that we bring in, and then I roast fennel. And corn is really in season right now. It's really sweet white corn. So we roast the white corn, take that off the cob. We roast the fennel. We combine that all with this had also roasted scallops. And then we mix that with mascarpone and ricotta, which is an Italian. It's very Italian, but it's got our own little twist on things. You know, it's got fresh herbs from our garden, and we do a little smoked tomato coulis, and it's really a very simple dish. I'm also very into simple food and letting although it's got these ethnic influences and different ways of gather, I also like to let the food speak for itself. And so hopefully you had that. You tasted the seafood, you tasted the scallop, you tasted the fennel and the corn, and none of it was overpowering. It's all about balance and finesse while letting the integrity of the food's product speak for itself. And that's why ingredients are so, you know, so that's it.
Now, I've read where you actually learned to forage your own mushrooms. Well, the ones we had tonight, I think, were not in season for foraging, but we did have significant wild mushrooms in this dish. Tell us about this wild mushroom. Tell us, first of all, about the foraging, and tell us about the wild mushrooms you use.
Well, I love to forage. Right now, you're right. Right now, there's no local mushrooms. Some of those mushrooms you had are from Oregon. The lobster mushrooms are from Oregon. But a lot of those mushrooms are actually cultivated just around the corner, about a quarter mile away. And they're all organically grown. It's a mushroom company. And
we've interviewed them. They sent me the most beautiful basket of mushrooms, better than any bouquet of flowers I've ever seen.
It's absolutely amazing what they do. The product they do, it's wonderful. It's all organic. It's sustainable. The mushrooms are very clean, and they're year-round, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. And then I mix in the wild mushrooms, and you asked me about the foraging. I just love to forage. I love to be out in nature, and I love to get my hands dirty and feel the earth, you know, and that makes the connection with the seasons and with the food that you just can't buy. It's something you feel almost in your soul, you know, you feel it deep inside of you, and that gets the creative process going for me. So those mushrooms I can sear very hot, some shallots, garlic, and then I deglaze that with Madeira, and then a touch of cream. Very simple. And then the fresh herbs. Very simple, but again, good things come in small.
Have you ever had a bad experience with finding a wild mushroom?
No, I usually stay away from ones that are dangerous. Most mushrooms have another mushroom that's similar that is dangerous, but other mushrooms are no. There's no other mushroom that's close, and so they're very. They stick out very much, and that's usually what I my favorite is the porcinis and the...
Let's talk a little bit about... You wanted to explain what you think makes a great restaurant, what makes food great.
Well, I don't know if I have the final answer, but I do have an opinion on the thing, on this, and you were asking about kind of my philosophy on things. Basically, My approach to it is it's all about intention, and it's about mindfulness and thought about what you're doing and caring about what you're doing. So you obviously first you source the good ingredients, and that's you start with that, obviously. But once you get the nice ingredients and you have it and you kind of come with a place of, I guess it's passion, I guess it's from the heart, I guess it comes by, you know, many terms, but really, for me, it just has to do with truly caring about what you're doing. And that's, I think, why, you know, grandma's chicken soup always tasted better or whatever. I think there's some kind of transfer that happens with the food when you actually care about what you're doing and you are truly passionate about it, and you you hold yourself and the whole, obviously, all my associates in the kitchen and everybody that works here, you hold yourself to a certain standard of excellence by being true to what you are, and as long as that intention is a positive goal, and it's to please the guest, and that's it, to do something that you are proud of. And for me, you know, I fail obviously many times, you know, but by having that intention and always reevaluating everything I'm doing and redoing it and reinventing it, I continually improve, for one, and for two, I think that the purity of the experience for people is evident. And I've felt that that's been the response here at Mosaic.
I must say, the service here, your servers are really special. And we were very impressed. We wanted to talk about two more dishes that are signatures here. One is this filet mignon.
Yes, the filet is definitely our signature item. People come back for it, and I'm pretty proud of it. It's the bottom line. So what we do is we take the filet. Obviously, it's all natural Angus, no hormones, no antibiotics, that kind of thing. And it's actually very simple. Again, it's you know, salt, and I do actually ground coffee, very finely ground coffee, and cover the whole steak with it, and then very high heat. I use only rice oil here in the kitchen, besides olive oil, but. Right, I cook most things in rice oil, which is a very high smoke point oil, and it's very clean, very neutral, so it really allows the food to speak for itself. So we sear it, and then we throw it in the oven and roast it. It creates a nice crust of coffee, and then we use the make a chocolate demi-glace, which sounds a little bit odd for your listeners, but it absolutely is amazing, the combination of the chocolate with the coffee. It's almost like a mocha type of situation, a savory mocha, if you will.
Where are we exactly? Now, we already can say where we are. Do you have a website?
Yes, we do. It's called mosaiceats.com.
Listeners, I think you should come here, because everybody that was here when we were arriving, everyone was leaving saying they couldn't wait to get back. You've developed a really devoted clientele.
Yes, we have a ton of repeat business and very loyal following. I think it goes back to caring about what you're doing and time in for the servers and being sincere about what we're doing. And this is, you know, there's a homogenization of food across the country, you know, with all fast food and organization of things. And it's I think it's rare when people are individual doing things with passion and with respect they're doing, and everybody here wants to be here. They all feel a team. We are all a team. We're a family. I love everybody here that works with me, and there's no hierarchy. We're all in this together, and we all want to succeed so we can have fun, and we all love what we do. So,
well, that's very California.
Another chef philosopher.
Yes, we have a lot of those.
California is filled with them.
Yeah, as well as candles and crystals.
Candles and crystals, too?
There are lots of candles and crystals, yeah. It's a whole different way of life, and it's a different mindset. But, boy, it sure was good.
It was an excellent, excellent place. And just in case you're wondering what's coming up in the weeks ahead, I must say hello to our friend Dusky Estes and John Stewart at Zazu.
Love them.
We had a chance to visit with them. We have an update segment from them, and I was delighted to be able to find out that Decanter Magazine's September issue had a supplement on California, and then the page about restaurants. You'd think Zazu would be at the bottom, but it's actually at the top of the list.
You mean at the bottom because of the Z?
Yeah, because of the Z.
It
wasn't an alphabetical list. It was a list of people, places people thought were the best. in an out of the way place on a road 4 miles west of Santa Rosa is Zazu, and we'll be talking to Dusky about that. We had a wonderful experience at Chef Michael Minna in San Francisco, where we met
Lum Du,
a new star.
Yes,
a new star, absolutely no doubt. We stayed at Larry.
Lum Du.
Yeah, we stayed at Larry Coletto's new place, Dick's Cove, the fish camp.
Pat Coletto.
I always say Larry. I don't know why.
We met
the founder of Domaine Canaris, and we talked about making sparkling wine.
So that's all coming up.
All coming up, yeah. Just around the corner.
Can I say one more thing before we sign off?
Of course you can.
I'd love to get more emails from listeners about what kinds of things they'd like to listen to. Don't email selling me stuff.
and the address is on the menu.
On the menu radio.com. Yes.
And we'll get back to you, and we'll try to incorporate your suggestions into program.
That sounds good. I like to get
mail. Is that a good idea? You like to get mail?
I like to get mail.
I don't like to get spam. I'm about a 90% spam rate right now, and it's driving me up the wall. But so if you send me email and it's not spam, that'll be wonderful.
Okay. Well, here we go.
And here comes the music. Another week gone by. Boy, time goes by so quickly when you're having fun.
Till next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jazzin' Around with David J. is next on The Edge, AM 1550.